Radio Prague News.
Prime Minister Petr Nečas is to meet with his British counterpart David Cameron in London just ahead of the EU Fiscal Pact summit on March 1st. Heavy snow and high winds continue to disrupt traffic around the country, and the European Court of Human Rights has ruled that Czech investigators made mistakes in the case of a Roma man who apparently committed suicide while in custody. Prime Minister Petr Nečas is to meet with his British counterpart David Cameron in London just ahead of the EU Fiscal Pact summit on March 1st. It is expected the Prime Ministers will fine-tune their stances before the EU countries sign a final version of the Fiscal Union Treaty. The Czech Republic and Great Britain are the only EU member states to refuse to join the treaty, which is intended to help solve the current Eurozone crisis and strengthen the fiscal discipline and coordination of economic policies within the EU. The Czech Prime Minister's opposition to the deal has provoked a sharp dispute with coalition partner Karel Schwarzenberg and has been widely criticized in the public forum. Mr. Nečas argues that he does not have a mandate to back the treaty because it transfers some national powers to Brussels and wants Czech citizens to vote on it in a referendum. Heavy snow and high winds continue to disrupt traffic around the country, with practically all regions reporting serious problems. Around 30 people had to be evacuated from their cars by emergency crews overnight, and 50 roads remained closed to traffic on Thursday morning. Czech Railways reports numerous delays, and many buses are also running behind schedule. Although the country's main motorways are open to traffic, police have asked drivers not to set out on the road if at all possible, since fresh problems are cropping up all the time. Many roads are blocked by stranded trucks, and traffic is moving at a snail's pace in the worst affected regions. On Wednesday, a pile-up of 50 cars closed the main highway from Prague to Brno for several hours. The European Court of Human Rights has ruled that Czech investigators made mistakes in the case of a Roma man who apparently committed suicide while in custody. The court awarded roughly half a million crowns to the man's family in compensation for damages on the grounds that his death was never thoroughly and independently investigated. The 2002 case involved a 23-year-old Roma man suspected of having stolen a videotape recorder. After several hours in detention, he leapt from an 8-meter-high window while being escorted. Lawyers from the League of Human Rights argued that the investigation had been carried out by the same police officers who had the man in custody and failed to describe what had gone on during the 6 hours he was detained. The European Court found that the police had erred in not using handcuffs and in leading the man past a window without bars. Now turning briefly to the weather, conditions over the coming days are expected to be mostly cloudy to cloudy, with more snow showers around the country and daytime temperatures slightly above the freezing point. For more news updates throughout the day, see our website at radio.cz. For now, that's the end of the news. You're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. My name's Christian Falvey. In today's program, the government moves to give crime victims greater protection. A tourist agency promises to show visitors the best of the worst, targeting the country's problems with corruption. In Panorama, we'll hear from a journalist who has stumbled across a long-forgotten story of survival from World War II, and we'll end the show with another Czech lesson, as always. Please stay with us. Being a crime victim can be a shattering experience, and many who have personally experienced it say that reporting the incident and the investigation that follows can be equally agonizing. At the present time, there is no code of conduct specifying how the police or state attorneys should treat crime victims, and critics say their conduct often leaves much to be desired. The Czech government has now moved to correct that, approving an amendment to the law which would give crime victims more support and greater protection. Daniela Lazarova has the story.
Victims of hate crime who have suffered a brutal assault such as a beating or rape often say that what they go through at the police station and courtroom is often more degrading than the assault itself. NGOs and local organizations involved in helping the victims of crime say that many victims refuse to report the incident, being too embarrassed to talk about it and wanting to close the door on the nightmare right away. Rape victims often complain they're questioned with no respect for privacy and, in addition to reliving the trauma in detail, are sometimes questioned in a manner that suggests they might have invited the assault. The incident generally impacts the victim's private life, their work life, and leaves many fearing for their safety. The Czech government has now moved to correct that and ensure that the victim of a crime, who is often the only witness, does not get treated in the same manner as the perpetrator. The amendment to the law proposed by the Justice Ministry would ensure that crime victims would be offered legal advice, financial aid, or short-term protection when necessary. They would be briefed about the progress on the case and be told when the offender is arrested, charged, bailed and sentenced. Justice Minister Jiří Pospíšil says the bill should significantly change the rights of a crime victim.
A bude si moci zvolit takzvaného důvěrníka, to znamená zvláště jde-li o oběť trestného činu.
Crime victims will be able to bring a confidant, a family member, close friend or a lawyer, who'd be present during questioning or any other ordeal they face. This is important, especially when victims are young or in some way disadvantaged. Victims will be given the right to make a statement regarding how the crime impacted their lives, which could ultimately influence the court's verdict. And finally, victims will be offered financial aid to the tune of 50,000 crowns, which will be paid out by the state, and which the state will try to reclaim from the perpetrator.
The proposed bill will now be put to the vote in both houses of parliament. Its approval would significantly improve the position of crime victims and strengthen cooperation between the Justice Ministry and the help organisations and NGOs who are now struggling to provide whatever help they can from the sidelines.
Many thanks to Daniela Lazarová. Critics may say that the Czech government is doing little to address the country's high levels of corruption, but that hasn't stopped entrepreneurial figures from stepping in to fill the vacuum. Dominik Yun has this report.
Interested in seeing the top spots for tunneling, murky hidden centres of power, or finding some of the buildings that have resulted from alleged shady deals? Then Corrupt Tour may be what you're after. They are promising to show the best of the worst, as their motto puts it, their website adding that they are striving to open up an entirely new field of tourism. Or is it all just a new way to shame the country's politicians? Petr Šourek, a young theatre director and philosopher, rather than a typical business person, is the man behind the satirical enterprise. He recently sat down with Czech television to explain the project, which stemmed from some of his stage work also mocking the issue of Czech corruption, and argued that the main aim was to find a fresh way to present the urgency of this issue to the public.
Samozřejmě korupce je něco, co zcela běžně požírá business.
Obviously, corruption is something that routinely erodes business. That's a given. So in the beginning, you set up normal business, and then you pay off the corrupt entities and gain a kind of above-standard arrangement. But gradually, they demand more and more, and it ends up destroying the business. So this endeavor highlights that corruption is a real subject of debate in this country. And for us, it represents a raw material. For some people, that's crude oil. Others have timber. And for us, it's corruption. For the media, too, something like corruption presents the raw materials to tell a story, and we are just doing that in a slightly different way.
So is the endeavor pure parody, or is the business model really designed to function? The website would suggest the latter. There's a number one can call to reserve a coach tour, a price list with trips ranging from around 250 to 600 crowns. Presently, CorruptTour.com even notes that its most recent Prague safari, which takes people to the security wall and CCTV-protected homes of influential lobbyists, and Hospital on the Edge of the Law, which takes people to three Prague hospitals where state money is apparently being misused, are both sold out.
It's a real travel agency. It all works like any other travel agency. So it is a real product, except that I would say it has a relatively large creative component and ends up as a something which I would describe as creative industry. It certainly isn't the standard artistic work where someone locks themselves up for 2 weeks or a month and then a final work emerges.
The endeavour was launched at Prague's Holiday World Trade Exhibition, which ran from the 9th to the 12th of February. Šorek also pointed out that his colleagues in the industry have been extremely polite and bear no malice towards this unusual take on Czech tourism. He even plans to take the effort abroad to Berlin and even Italy. But is not the ultimate aim to shame the country's lackadaisical political elite into acting to stop the erosion of the country by corruption? Šorek referenced a phrase famously once used by Václav Havel.
Já vlastně nemám rád tu blbou náladu, která tady panuje.
I personally don't like the bad mood that is prevailing in this country at the moment, and I wanted to have a good mood, so I thought of a way to turn a bad mood into a good one. And I really don't think that the Czech public is lethargic when it comes to these matters. Rather, I think that in the last 2 years people have been very interested in public affairs. It's a silly expression, but these things are kind of in at the moment, and this is just one example and component of that. If people are willing to join in and help promote this or even come along on a trip, then I consider that a positive sign.
Třeba i někam dokonce vyjet, tak já to považuji jenom za dobrý znak.
That was Dominik Jun talking to entrepreneur Petr Šourek. A reminder that you are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. My name is Christian Falvey. And now it's time in our program for a new edition of Panorama, on this occasion with Daniela Lazarova.
A black and white photograph of a smiling Jewish girl unearthed in a photographer's studio some years ago has led a young Czech journalist to piece together the dramatic story of a large group of Jewish children who were smuggled to Denmark to escape the Holocaust. While the story of the Nicholas Winton children is well known, this one is only just coming to light and will hopefully reunite long-lost friends scattered around the globe. The freelance journalist who is single-handedly tackling the task is Judita Matyášová, whom I invited to the studio. She began by telling me how it all came about.
It all started by one project. This project is for students of high schools, and they search for, hidden stories of Jewish people in Czech Republic.
The Lost Neighbors Project.
Yeah, right. And they found this student group from a village called Velký Beranov, close to Jihlava. They found story of Helena. Helena was 16 when she knew she must go to transport, and she went to the photographer and she said, could you make photo of me and as a, some kind of souvenir, I would like to take it together with me. And he did it. She paid the photo and the photographer asked her, and when you will come back for the photo? And she said, after everything will be over. But she never returned for the photo. And in 2005, this old photographer was collecting the archive and he found this photo. It's still here. And I don't remember the name of that girl. So he put it to the regional daily and he put there, do you know this girl? And
so after all these years, he tried to find her.
Exactly. And he put it in the daily and nobody answered. And some years after, in 2009, this student group, which I mentioned in the beginning, they were doing interviews with survivors. And one lady said, I don't remember nobody from Jewish community, but I remember that my schoolmate was published in the regional daily. And it was when this photo suddenly had the name Helena. And this all started. I published it.
So you got hold of the photo and you published it in Lidové noviny, the daily that you work for.
Yeah,
and what happened then?
Yeah, I published this story. It was cover story of our newspapers and I put it there and I was just thinking maybe. And 3 days or 4 days after, I had a call from Zuzana Ledererová. She's from Prague and she called that she knows Helena because Helena was her cousin, so I was thinking it's amazing and I have to do some kind of meeting. And so I met Zuzana and I had to ask, what's your story during the war? And she told me story, which I'm now continuing and which is my main goal.
So no. she was one of these 700 children who fled from this country to Denmark.
Yes, yes.
How did that come about?
Yeah, I couldn't believe at first moment. It was like, wow, like it's amazing story. And I immediately started to search if some researchers from museums or some experts ever documented this story, and I found nobody.
Because 700 is a large
group of children. Yeah, it's 700 from whole Europe, but exactly from our country, it's 150.
So who organized this escape?
Yeah, it was organized by Zionist organization. The name was Jugend Aliyah, and the headquarters of this organization was in Jerusalem. And they were organizing these courses in various countries in Europe. And in our country, it was organized as a part of Jewish community. And it was as a preparation for these kids for life and work in Palestine.
But they ended up in Denmark.
Yeah, in Denmark, because the organizers, they expected, okay, we will prepare these kids. And it's necessary to know that these kids, they were in age 14 and 16. It was very strict. And if you were too young or too old, it was almost impossible to go.
So we're talking about 150 children. Mm-hmm. Who left this country and fled to Denmark. And mm-hmm. what happened to them then? Because the Nazis eventually got there.
Yeah, these kids, they were used to live in cities. So they knew just very few about life in Denmark, like in agriculture. And suddenly they were in Danish farmers' families. So it must be very radical cut off everything from their life.
So they were placed in farmers' families. Yes, and basically, they were mm-hmm. scattered. Then they lose contact.
Yeah, they were spread all around Denmark. But the main group around Susanna and their closest friends, they were around the city called Næstved. It's 1 hour from Copenhagen.
So they led a fairly sheltered life there for how long?
Yeah, they stayed there from October 1939 till October 1943, when they had to escape to Sweden because Nazi started to hunt Jewish people. So this group had to go to Sweden. This country was neutral.
So they had to cross the channel, presumably, somehow.
Yeah. Usually this journey through the ocean, it took around 1 hour, and it was more than 12 hours. They were hidden in the fishermen boats, so it was terrible journey, but they survived.
They all survived, and they mm-hmm. ended up in Sweden.
Yeah, in Sweden, and the moment of escape, it's the moment of the cut of all contacts between them until January 2011, when I met Susanna.
So are they living in Sweden now, or are they scattered around the world? What
they
happened to them?
They are all around. They usually settle in Sweden, but boys applied immediately to Czechoslovak army in England, and they had to wait more than 1 year. And in 1944, the majority of boys went to England, and girls, they stayed all around in Sweden and waiting till the end of the war. And when end of the war, it's end of the stay in Scandinavia. So they returned to Czechoslovakia and found then nobody's here.
And they'd lost everyone?
Yes.
Did they try to find each other from that group? Because basically that would be the only friends they had, wouldn't it?
It's very difficult situation because suddenly you are finally home, but you are in your house, in your street, and there are no people, no beloved persons. So suddenly you have to ask yourself, where is my home? Because this is not my home without these people. So they started to think where to go, to Scandinavia, where they were by some kind of accident, or to Palestine, to country with kibbutz. And, you know, it was very difficult. So they had to solve this problem. That's the reason why they are in South Africa, in Canada, in a lot of countries. And just a few of them, as a Zuzana, they stayed here in Czechoslovakia.
How many of them have you managed to trace? And did they never try to find each other?
It sounds maybe very easy to find your friends from this wartime, but it's really not so easy because you have to solve your troubles, then you are looking for your relatives, then you maybe meet someone, marry, start new life, and then where to search for new informations. So it for them, it's very, very complicated to search to each other's.
It must be even harder for you to try and trace them after all these years. How are you going about it?
It's every story, it's completely different. I have something like a list of the names, but these names, it's from 1989, 1939. It might be completely changed. You know, like women, they are married, so it's very difficult. But I was in Denmark last year. I visited all these places where kids lived, and I found that there are still so many local people, Danish local people, who remember our kids. I put my story to Daily in Denmark, and I couldn't believe, because so many envelopes, so many calls, and there were letters like, "Hello, I'm Hilda, I'm 90 years old, I remember Hanka from Prague," and you know, it was so touching. It's difficult to describe, but I feel it's some kind of meeting of all these kids. It's virtual meeting because they are not in this kind of condition to meet, but they are so happy when they know the contacts and something
what happened
about the
to
friends.
The others.
Yes. It's something much more than work, really. Yeah.
So what is your goal now? What are you hoping to achieve here?
Yeah, I'm going to Sweden in March, where I would like to meet some of these kids. And then I go to Israel, where I have presentation at the Yad Vashem, which is amazing because it's big honor to be there. And I'm preparing a book and I'm preparing a movie, so many things, and that's it.
That's a fantastic story. Good luck with it.
Yeah, thanks.
Freelance journalist Judita Matyashova ending that edition of Panorama. Now in the final part of today's program, a Czech lesson from Pavla Horáková's popular ABC series, which Radio Prague has just started rebroadcasting.
And welcome to the ABC of Czech, the Czech language series which follows the letters of the alphabet. Today we get to the last letter of the alphabet and our series is almost over. We are going to finish it on a lighter note as Z stands for the zodiac. Astrology or
astrologie
has many fans in this country, just like anywhere in the world. And there are perhaps as many skeptics who disapprove of such unscientific methods and would never have their birth chart or
horoscope
interpreted. If you belong to either of those groups, or if you are completely indifferent to the issue, it might still be handy to at least know the Czech name of your star sign. You never know who might be interested. The astrological year has 12 signs.
Znamení.
It starts with the impulsive Aries, or
Beran,
literally meaning ram. It is followed by the sensual Taurus,
Bík,
or bull. Gemini is next, translated as
blíženci,
the old word for twins. The moon ruled Cancer, or
rak,
which means crayfish, comes after that. The sun sign of most of those born in August is Leo, in Czech
lev,
or lion. Its successor, Virgo,
pana,
literally virgin, is said to be precise and possessing a critical point of view. The Venus-ruled Libra has a sense of beauty and proportion and seeks balance and harmony. Its Czech name is
Váhy,
the scales. The passionate and piercing Scorpio is the sun sign of most of those born in November. In Czech it is called
Štír,
meaning, of course, scorpion. After Scorpio comes Sagittarius, who is supposed to be cheerful and carefree. The Czech equivalent is
Střelec,
an archer. The ambitious and proud Capricorn, or
Kozoroch,
is the sign ruling over most of January, followed by the communicative Aquarius, or
Vodnář.
The last sign of the astrological year is the Pisces,
Ryby,
or fish, who are supposed to be sensitive, compassionate, and helpful. Don't worry if you didn't have time to write all those down. You can go to our website, www.radio.cz/English, where you can listen to the program again and read it in text as well. This series may be over, but don't despair. Radio Prague has more Czech language programs in store for you. But that's all for now. So until next time...
Naschledanou.
Goodbye.
That was Pavla Horáková with the ABCs of Czech, wrapping up Radio Prague's English broadcast for today. If you would like to hear this program again or scan through our archives, they are always available for you on the internet at www.radio.cz. If you'd like to contact us, our email address is english@radio.cz, and we are also online on Facebook and Twitter under Radio Prague. You can also send a good old-fashioned letter to our mailing address at Vinohradská 12, 12099, Prague. From me, Christian Falvey, thanks for listening.